Hello and welcome to Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji. Niaga Spotlight goes through the week in business and future affairs, market watch, industries, analysis and insights. We've got you covered right here on Niaga Spotlight. Well, today on analysis, we're taking a much deeper look at APEC 2023. Now, the recently concluded APEC 2023, held in San Francisco from 11th to the 17th of November, saw, of course, a lot of Malaysia's core issues highlighted by the Malaysian contingent, led, of course, by Prime Minister Dato Sri Anwar Ibrahim. This exclusive interview today on Niaga Spotlight with Yang Berhormat Simzi Sin, who was one of five MPs accompanying Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, actually focuses on how the wider APEC agenda could perhaps translate into on-ground benefits for the Malaysian economy and the rakyat. YB, thank you so much for making time to join us. How are you doing today?
Yeah, good morning. Thank you very much for inviting me to this wonderful program.
Thanks very much. So, YB, let's get started off by having a look at some of the main agendas that were carried out during APEC 2023. If you could give us a brief overview of the kind of role that yourself and the Prime Minister's contingent had while accompanying him over there.
Okay, thank you. I think the APEC is very important because APEC is Asia-Pacific Economic Conference, and it talks about economy, having a more accessible to market, and it involves 21 economies in the APEC region. And then this APEC is important because it constitutes 60% of global population, 40% of global population and 60% of global market activities. That's why we are very honored Malaysia as a medium small country have a seat on the table to be part of the APEC meeting, and it is actually a very vibrant area, especially Asia Pacific. So our presence in APEC is very, very vital because Malaysia is seen as the bridge between the East and the West, and our Prime Minister is being seen as a leader of the East and can talk to the West. So we are actually benefiting from this both world. The Asia, what they call Asian region, as well as Pacific region. So this is where the Prime Minister is very well positioned, and Malaysia also very well positioned in APEC. Me and a few YBs are very glad to accompany the Prime Minister to go to San Francisco and witness live how Malaysia and also bring our voices, as well as also try to negotiate for better deals, better market access, and also better flow of economy between this region and Malaysia is benefiting from APEC conference.
Mm, absolutely. So it was also very much a jam-packed week, YB. Mm. So what we'll intend to do is basically have a look at some of the main areas that concern, of course, Malaysia's agenda, starting, of course, with MSMEs. Mm. So, of course, one of the interesting things in the leaders' declaration that came out of APEC 2023 is the fact that there was an emphasis on MSMEs. Now, considering that when it comes to MSMEs, about 23.2% of the Malaysian workforce is actually employed within MSME context as of 2021, what were some of the interesting key areas that came out, especially looking at how we have been progressing post-COVID-19 and economic recovery?
I think the APEC conference is very focusing on how to generate more economic activities, and MSME is very, very vital because most of the country in APEC region, apart from US, even US, their economy is also supported by MSME. And Malaysia, of course, I would say that more than 20%, I think it's more than 60 or 70% of the country's, the companies in the country is MSME. So that's why APEC is looking at how to grow MSME, because we cannot only rely on big companies. Big companies, at this point, they are growing larger and larger and become super companies. Like, for example, Apple, they have become 2 trillion, 3 trillion companies. But we also, the leaders also understand that MSME is still not growing. Mm-hmm. While big company become bigger, the MSME is not growing and they need help. That's why the APEC countries are leaders are looking at how to help and grow this by providing market access. Say for example, Malaysia. In the bilateral meeting, I'm quoting one example.
Sure.
Some of the countries are seeking Malaysia's market access so that they can export food, they can export various products to Malaysia. And these actually are MSME. For example, Korea, they wanted to have more market access to certain type of products. And they are actually leading those MSME to come to Malaysia for trade promotion, for exhibition, etc. So these are the things that the government in APEC are trying to do to help MSME.
Absolutely. Now, one wider question when it comes to MSMEs, YB, though, of course, is that trying to transition these leaders in the workforce from the informal to the formal sector. This is particularly important when it comes to our own local domestic economy. Perhaps if you could even tie it back to some examples from your own constituency, yeah. Bayan Baru, and your experiences.
Yes, a lot of our populations are working in informal sectors. So they are often neglected in giving grants or giving help or even seen as invisible. So how do we actually bring the informal workforce into formal workforce is a huge challenge everywhere in the world. For Malaysia's context, I believe one thing that the government is trying to do is to provide technical vocational trainings to a lot of young people who are actually outside of this formal sector. Say, for example, I would say our Grab, Abang-Abang Grab, yeah?
Sure.
They are also part of the informal sector, all right? So how do we bring them in is by providing, apart from doing Grab, we also try to bring them into giving, they have a choice for TVET, etc., so that eventually they go to formal sectors, employed in the companies where they have a sustainable income, a career path, and etc. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are some, informal workers. We also try to bring them into a formal sectors in industry, in factories, and into various job that is more formal. And I think the government is also trying to introduce through taxation, meaning everyone will have to be registered as a taxpayer, although they are not paying tax, but they are registered so that they are being traced, and then the government can actually provide funding, provide training through HRD, Corp, and etc. for them to become a formal workers, etc.
Exactly. So this is, of course, part of a wider system that looks at targeted assistance. We've also been talking about targeted subsidies, yeah. etc. But that, of course, goes into a different way. Thank you for highlighting about TVET. We'll come back to that in a little bit. But YB, first off, of course, connected to doing business and ease of access, the primary conversation is actually about digitalization, which was also a huge focus at APEC 2023. Could you tell us about what you learned from perhaps some of the sessions that you were able to attend?
Yeah, I think digitalization, especially AI, artificial intelligence, dominates the entire APEC conference.
Sure.
APEC has two big conferences. One is the leadership conference. They call it Leadership Summit, and another one is CEO Summit. So all over the world, the CEO comes to this APEC CEO Summit to talk about issues that affects the business, the future of business, and etc. And this conference, remarkably, overwhelmingly, is about AI, part of the digitalization, as what you have mentioned. So AI. So what is very interesting, I attended the conference of CEO Summit, and there was Microsoft,
all the big players.
Yeah, all the big players.
Sure.
Google and Sam Altman. Sam Altman is the OpenAI ChatGPT CEO. On Thursday, I listened to his talk, and Friday he was fired, and now he's back as CEO again.
That's right.
Besides our story. But the whole idea is that AI is going to be big, and then how Malaysia can position to become in digitalization, so that we adopt AI into every aspect of our manufacturing, How do we apply AI in a lot of business processes,
sure,
as well as our banking and all sorts of new technology? How do we adopt it so that we increase our productivity? So I think one of the takeaway from this is that AI is coming. Malaysia's even big corporation as well as MSME must also adopt an AI strategy so that they can increase productivity and benefit from this digitalization and AI generation coming.
So one other issue that always comes up, and it would be wonderful to get some clarification if that was also part of the discussion within APEC 2023, about how to also ensure that middle-range economies like Malaysia, yes, we're digitalizing, yes, we're using AI and deploying even 5G, etc., at a rapid rate, YB, but how do we balance that with ensuring that there are no job losses, such as what the fear is, particularly when it comes to the less digitalized aspects of our industries?
So I think a lot of people are afraid of AI because they will, you know, they are saying that even new customer will be replaced by AI generated new customer. But I don't believe so. Okay.
Because we have some in-house bulletins, though, of course, with our AIs.
I think politicians will be replaced as well. So I think it is actually, we have to look at it as every generation has transformation technology.
Sure.
In the 1800s is about industrialization, the steam machine. Everyone was so afraid of steam machine, and they thought that jobs would be losses, but it actually created new opportunities. Then in the 1980s or 70s, there's new computer. People thought that computer will replace the jobs. They have protests against computers, but now everyone relies on computers. AI is the same. I think it is going to help. It's a tools that help us. So it helps us to, for example, now we can do research much faster.
Sure.
For issues.
ChatGPT,
etc. So it actually helps us to understand the matter faster. As news anchor, you immediately will know what to say and what is the issues. So within seconds, you know it.
Sure.
So I think it is helping us. So that's why we have to have a strategy to actually adopt AI from as simple as staffers, a secretary. They must know how to use ChatGPT to help them to understand issues where even the bosses can use AI, ChatGPT to understand what's the latest in the market, etc. I think that helps us in productivity.
Absolutely. And I think there's also opportunities, for example, looking at the aging population of Malaysia and also bringing people back into the workforce. And this could be perhaps one of the primary tools by which they are able to have a sustainable future,
yes,
even past retirement age, as we live longer as Malaysians.
However, there's also, with any technology, there will be losers. If they don't adopt it, then if they don't understand it, then they'll be left behind. Say, for example, cell phones, handphones.
Sure.
Those people who really don't use handphones, then they'll be left behind. But I'm sure anyone will learn. Last time we were talking about during the pandemic, we were trying to say that, okay, we have to buy food online. You know, the older generation was so afraid. They said, how do I survive? But they met my mom, who is already 70 years old. She will have to learn how to pick food and then get the Grab food delivered to the house. And she's doing it and she loves it.
And now it's normal.
Now it's normal. So I think everyone, especially young generation, they must learn how to use it. Adopt AI into every aspect of their life.
Yes, absolutely. Not just for example, on your social media platforms.
Exactly.
All right. Moving along from there, YB, let's look at climate change. Now, of course, that is a huge issue all by itself. Socioeconomically speaking, though, let's look at how we can look at Malaysia's position with wanting to transition towards green energy. At the same time, there being plenty of opportunity for highly skilled jobs in this sector, but us having a lack of talent that may be properly qualified at this point in time in 2023 to meet those upscaling expectations for green energy.
Yes, yes. We have a new energy transformation plan.
That's right.
So government has already, the Prime Minister has already announced it and launched it. So we are going towards this renewable energy to tackle climate change. These are very good plan. Actually, I think we are very glad that we are ahead of many, many countries to do transformation in renewable energies to tackle climate change. However, like what you say is that we are lack of this what they call know-hows, as well as the workforce who doesn't who is still struggling to how to, you know, who is not skilled enough to do all this transformation. That's why I think the government, even in APEC, I would say that a lot of leaders are discussing about lack of skilled workers in many, many aspects. The leaders may have a lot of force, what they call a vision.
Sure.
They have plans, but ultimately it has to be translated to workforce, skilled workers who can do the transformation. So I think in Malaysia, for example, if we want to transition into renewable energy, okay, for example, we want solar, okay? Solar, they need a lot of what they call programming, you know, how do we connect to the grid, etc. And then, okay, let's say if we have renewable energy, we have a new, what they call, say for example, we want to tackle climate change, we want to go for EV, okay, EV manufacturing. A lot of, I don't think we have enough engineers to tackle the investment into EV.
Correct.
Including this supercharging station, fix those supercharging. We cannot always import, right? We have to grow our own industry, companies that provide services in EVs, in charging, or even manufacture our own EV cars. These are the things that I think is challenging for Malaysia, but I believe we're still not too late. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And speaking about operationalizing all of this, perhaps, there is, of course, been a 6.8 billion ringgit unprecedented allocation for TVET under Budget 2024. Perhaps that could help to fill some of the more immediate gaps within the next couple of years, right?
Yes, the TVET, we are the government is trying to do transform TVET. Infrastructure-wise, giving grants, giving better pay to the professors and etc. to upgrade the institution into better TVET institution. But however, there's a very important factor which I think everyone has to take note is that the interest of the people, the young people, how do we incentivize them or make them interested in TVET? Because the enrollment is still quite low. And part of it is the wages. If the TVET, we have been discussing or we have been debating in Parliament, is that if a TVET graduates, undergoing 3 years of TVET training, they graduated and then they get 1,500 minimum wage. That doesn't incentivize them to take up 3 years and then and start climbing the 1,500 ringgit wage ladder. You know,
true.
So it has to be progressive wages.
Mm-hmm.
It has to, so people must be incentivized through wages, okay?
And so also living wages, perhaps, exactly, rather than minimum, right?
Exactly. So right now, I think it's not fair, the system, meaning after going through, they have technical skill, they're much better, but their income is lower than going straight to become a Grab driver. The Grab driver can get 4,000, 5,000 if they're hardworking. Maybe 6,000, but the TVET, they grow up, they come out from TVET institution, they go join the company, they work 8 hours a day, they got 1,500, plus OT, 2,000. I mean, how do you justify this? So I think this is what one of the aspects we have to tackle in terms of, TVET institution. And
absolutely. Yeah. So on that note though, we take a quick breather. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back here on Niaga Spotlight. Welcome back to Niaga Spotlight. Still with me, Tamina Kausji. And today, of course, on the show, we are covering APEC 2023 with an exclusive interview with Yang Berhormat Simzi Zin, Member of Parliament for Bayan Baru, who was one of course, the contingent of five MPs who accompanied Dato Sri Anwar Ibrahim on the trip. So getting back into the conversation, YB, let's move into one area which, of course, was a specific interest to you, particularly in your former portfolio, food security. Let's talk about what were some of the discussions focusing around on APEC 2023's agenda when it came to food security, especially building this up in the region, looking at the shocks that we have had over the past 3 years due to COVID, supply chain disruptions, et cetera.
APEC, this year, APEC's team is creating sustainable and resilient economies throughout the world. Because I think most of the APEC countries learn from one thing in the 2020 pandemic is that the disruption of supply chain, food security, because and also the Ukraine and the Russia war has disrupted the supply chain, especially in terms of food. So one of the very big issue is about supply chain. Food security in the conference. So there were several conferences on food security. So I attended some of it because I was former Deputy Minister of Agriculture, and food security is deeply in my heart, and I really want to learn more about it. So I think main of the many countries, they realize this and constantly raise about food security. The APEC conference, they have reached a consensus which is to reach open, free and fair trade, especially in food, food trade. They call it food trade. Because I think the problem with a lot of countries, they learn the wrong lessons. After the pandemic, everyone is trying into protectionism.
Looking more internally rather than cooperatively.
And also because of the trade war between US and China.
Correct.
We are retreating from global free and fair trade. Everyone is trying to protect themselves. I think that is wrong because we have to understand that no one is an island. The global cooperation actually makes everyone prosper. In terms of food, we cannot produce all the food that we have. We cannot produce all the food that we need. It's impossible because you like roti canai. We can never get wheat. We cannot plant wheat because wheat is a temperate
plant. Even though it's such a staple of the Malaysian
diet.
Yes,
it's such a staple. We all like our bread and roti and roti canai, but it's actually, we have to import the wheat. And our comparative advantage is palm oil. Our comparative advantage is a lot of, rubber, which we can export at cheap. Because once you are efficient in palm oil, you produce in a massive scale at a very low competitive price, then you export. And then by getting those proceeds, you buy those that you cannot produce. So what I'm saying is no one is an island. We must have collaborations, ensure that there's a global free and fair trade of food so that we can make sure that we have enough food for everyone's food security because we complement each other. Mm-hmm. Protectionism is not the way to go. However, of course, the politician will always say, I want food security, I want everything produced in our country so that we can protect ourselves. Yes, to a certain extent, yes. We have to look at our weaknesses. Our weaknesses is, for example, paddy. Paddy, we only produce 70% of the paddy, and it can be increased. Yes, if we work hard and we really tackle the issues, we increase our paddy yields, and actually that protects ourselves because we protect ourselves from the global fluctuations and instability of supply, which is good, but you have to work on that. But you cannot say that I want to protect my paddy farmers and I put a tariff on
all exporting.
No, that is not That's not right, because we must work, compete with each other, okay, to produce better.
So it's really about balancing interests as well, right? Considering that we import up to about a quarter of our food needs, and at the same time, the average Malaysian family spends about 70% of their monthly bills on food production. Any thoughts, YB, around how, especially when it comes to our urban farms, smallholders, which is more for our local supply chain, how they can be maximized or improved via digitalization and technology, perhaps?
Okay, so a lot of talks about our food factory, you know, plant factory in urban settings. Yes, I think in a small scale is good. Let's say everyone is interested to plant their own vegetables at home using IoT, Internet of Things, monitor their, you know, the water, nutrients, and even giving the, what they call, the lightings to make it grow faster, which is good. Everyone, if you have interest, do it. And actually, it reduces our dependency on import, etc. Because if you produce a little bit, everyone produce a little bit, it actually helps. However, we have to look at cost of production. How does it compare to the market? Because we are talking about massive scale of food. Let's say if we are talking about vegetables, we have to have big farms to supply enough for the country. So in that sense, it's about cost and benefit of whether we can produce enough big scale at a lower cost. It's because it's a global market.
Absolutely, and also about ensuring that there's enough domestic supply, particularly given the more random weather cycles that we're experiencing.
Exactly.
All right, from there, YB, I'd like to move into a deeper look at the supply chain shocks and how Malaysia can actually perhaps capitalize even further on actually being able to close some of the gaps, something which, interestingly enough, we were able to identify due to shortages during COVID-19 and the lockdowns. But some arenas, of course, of industries in Malaysia remained very well and operationalized.
Malaysia is a part of a very big global supply chain in many, many things, especially industrial goods. It's even semiconductors. We are one of the we are part of the global supply chain of semiconductors. And Malaysia, surprisingly, export 25% of our semiconductors chips to America. Okay? So we are part of this big supply chain. Okay, let's say semiconductor chips is designed in TSMC. It comes out, okay, and then it sends to Malaysia for packaging. Packaging after that, we send to US for final iPhone products, etc. So we are part of it. So the disruption of 2020 pandemic, etc. People are a lot of companies are talking about friendshoring, because of the trade war between China and US. People are talking about friendshoring. People are talking about China plus one. Now I'm hearing Taiwan plus one, because they also don't want to rely on Taiwanese,
semiconductor production alone. Yes.
So Malaysia is uniquely positioned, well-positioned in this global geopolitical as well as supply chain issues. We are uniquely positioned to receive a lot of investment into this semiconductors and the supply. So I think Malaysia as a country, we must really capitalize on it. Capture all this, because this could be one of a lifetime opportunity for divestment, for friendshoring, and get all this investment. And that's why I want to credit the Prime Minister for working so tirelessly. You know, he's like going here every month, he goes out to capture all this investment. I think it's good, because that actually brings in all this investment, and eventually we become the supply chain. And it actually helps us industrially, because when an investment comes in, they bring in their other supplier, the downstream supplier and all this. So we create that ecosystem in the country, and that actually strengthens Malaysia's position as a manufacturing hub.
Absolutely, and trying to look at it both vertically as well as horizontally,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
From there, YB, let's look at the women agenda at APEC 2023. Now, wider goals-wise, looking at the Malaysia Madani government's commitments, it is, of course, to increase women's labour force participation rate from about 56-odd% to about 60%. What were some of the interesting issues that came up, particularly when it comes to ability to reduce barriers and ensure that women not only join the workforce, but then stay in the workforce?
Okay, I think it is about leadership, the determination of the leadership, whether they really pull through the entire what they call policy. I think 60% is a good target. And I want to credit the government for actually doing a lot of things to make sure the women's, especially, for example, they start with the top leadership, which is the boardroom. The boardroom must have enough women voices. Now, we understand that this Suruhanjaya our security exchange, SE, actually has already given what they call a very directive that boardroom must have 30% women. So diversify the boardroom, it actually creates the policy in the company to hire more women and actually makes the workforce more balanced, you know. And then so by having more opportunities in the workforce, or even the companies have more opportunities of vacancy specifically giving to the women, then there are more employment opportunities for the women to participate in the workforce. So I think it's about leadership from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. Incentive-wise, the previous PH government has this incentivized for women to go back from, you know, some women along the life, you know, when you graduated and then you work for a few years, you get married, and then you drop off from the workforce.
Yes, correct. Okay,
so
usually
to raise a family.
To raising families, yes. Correct.
So the previous PH government has incentives for them to join back. If they join back, the government pays certain things to the employer. Okay. I think at this point, I think we may have to think about creative ideas to bring the women back to work, incentivize, maybe tax break, etc. Mm-hmm. And then another thing that I think the government has done, which is good, which is a 90-day maternity leaves, you know, which actually let the women have enough time to stay with their babies. And then so that they don't have to decide, okay, I don't want to...
Go back to work,
yeah,
for example.
I want to quit my job just to take care of the baby. Mm-hmm. Newborn baby. So I think that is also part of the policy that we actually needs to encourage. We cannot force the government companies to do it. But like what I say, if let's say a board which is diversified with women in at the top, they set policy which is more friendly to women, I think that's important.
Absolutely. And of course that meets wider agendas for economic participation, which is of course much better for the Malaysian economy.
Exactly.
And one last area that I'd like to focus on, YB, before we wrap up the discussion, let's look at the halal economy and what opportunities there exist. Now approximately 11% of APEC economies actually have a Muslim population. That adds up to roughly 325-odd million who of course consume and use halal products. Now Malaysia is already well positioned with our history and fantastic track record when it comes to halal production. What were the discussions at APEC 2023 like focusing around this aspect of the industry?
Yeah, you raise a very interesting discussion because I remember the bilateral meetings that I attended with Korea as well as Peru. Both countries has raised about halal industry. So they are all very interested and very passionate about halal, and they want to Malaysia to share knowledge and technical know-hows and certifications to their countries. Say for example, Peru, Prime Minister also announced there's nothing secret. So Peru actually requested Malaysia to set up a what they call this certification center in Peru, so that their product can be certified and then export to Malaysia. So I think that is where Malaysia is very unique in terms because we have very high standard of halal certification, and when the products comes into Malaysia, we process it, we certify it halal, and we export to other countries in the Muslim world. So we are uniquely positioned as a country that actually a food processing center for halal food. So what I feel is that it's important that Malaysia continues to grow this halal industry, because like what you say, 11% of especially Indonesia, that's a big wider Middle East country which is part of this halal industry.
Correct. And it was quite interesting because what was off note is that Malaysia's halal export touched almost 60 billion ringgit in 2022. So that's incredible 64% growth rate. And that was also looking at the time frame it happened within pandemic related economy, right?
Exactly.
Exactly. Like one last agenda, of course, according to the HIMP 2030 agenda, there's an aim also to create 700,000 job opportunities in the halal sector. Now, halal also is increasingly becoming mechanized. When it comes to jobs in this sector, how can we ensure that we are once again looking at creating domestic job opportunities specifically for our youth and etc.?
I think halal industry, like what I say, is food processing is a huge industry in the world and it's growing. Because I think we are facing an issue of food security, and how do we preserve food longer through manufacturing is important. Okay, I think a very simple thing is our Maggi, our what do you call this?
Most favorite instant noodles.
Instant noodles. If we can manufacture instant noodle and export to the world with halal certification, I think it's important. It's a huge, big market. And I want to say is that you'll be surprised that actually instant noodle from Korea is so popular now, okay? And they are exporting to the world. So we have, you know, these are the sectors that we Malaysia should be actually pioneer, or we have a
maintain that level.
We should maintain or even capitalize on it. Say, for example, another one is coffee, instant coffee. Our Malaysia is very good at, we don't produce much coffee beans. We import about 1.5 billion a year on US dollar on coffee beans. But we produce 3 billion coffee, instant 3-in-1 coffee, and we export 3 billion US dollar of coffee, which is very good, you know, and it is, you know, with halal certification, you penetrate all over the world. So I think Malaysia is well positioned, and how these create high quality jobs, because these are a lot of food manufacturing. I have visited factories that produce machines, instant coffee machines, located in Penang. Yeah, so these are and then a lot of engineers are working on the design of how to design food process machine, etc. So good for Malaysia. And then when you have a lot of automation, digitalization, your workforce automatically get higher pay. When they have got higher pay, you attract people, talented people to go into all this. And it's good to increase our productivity. Mm-hmm. We will not be stuck with low wages, unproductive wage, what they call workforce, but more higher qualified, better pay, talented workforce.
Thank you. Thanks very much, YB. I think it was an absolutely interesting discussion about how perhaps the APEC 2023 agenda translates for the Malaysian rakyat as well as the economy.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's all we have time for today on Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji. We'll of course see you next week with more business analysis and insights. Here's to a productive week ahead.